Accession number 4596, reel 2.
Sir Ludwig Gutmann, reel 2.
Now, Speer mentioned another very interesting fact which I didn't know. He mentioned a meeting of October 1942, where Himmler addressed the Gauleiters, in which he, in the presence of close friends of or co-workers of personal co-workers of Hitler, where he said, Jews, men, women and children will be murdered, but that must be an absolute secret which we will take to our grave. Quotation. You can read it in the...
A lot of people say that nobody in Germany knew what was going on during the time.
Oh, that is not quite true.
I don't mean Jews, I mean non-Jewish Germans.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, there are some people who didn't know. Everybody knows there are concentration camps, because they were not only set up for Jews, but for political people, you see, socialists, Catholics, and so on. And you know, one of the victims were a priest who was hanged. The son of Professor Bonhoeffer. I forgot his Christian name now. Anyway, yes, well, everybody knows that there were concentration camps. But I must say that quite a number of people didn't know about the gas chambers. That I would say. And as I have left Germany only in 1939, just before the war, I cannot generalize that every German was bad, or as one said, say the best German is the dead one, you see, because I have experienced people who stood up for their convictions, either became went to concentration or were killed, and that these are facts. And there are many people who came to me who were so-called full Aryans, you know, complaining and all these things. But they were hopeless. They were helpless. They couldn't do anything. And that I can tell you from my personal experience. It is not true that every German was bad. But the great majority, of course, became so involved in the spell of that man, because that was a fantastic thing. Now we know that this kind of spell can be easily aroused, you see, easily aroused with the, how do you call it, the singers, you know, one of the ships was just in Tokyo.
Oh, Paul McCartney.
Yes. I mean,
like the Beatles.
Yes.
Like pop singers.
Like the
yes.
Beatles, you see. Absolutely. And I realized also when I came to one day to Buenos Aires in 1950, I came in a car, was taken there, and there was a huge crowd, and Viva Perón, you see, like Heil Hitler. It was 1950, and it's exactly the same mentality, you see. It produced a mass psychosis, quite acute mass psychosis in people.
Did you ever attend any of Hitler's rallies to see what it was all about?
Only from the distance, but what I attend, yes. And in 1933 and 33 or 34, there was the official burning of books of Jewish and non-Aryan authors, amongst them the famous, most famous people, you see. I was instilled docent at the university, and I said, I can't believe it. And there was a ceremony in front of the castle of Frederick the Great. And I said to him, can't believe it. It's impossible. And I would go to see it and said, you must be mad. Said, of course I will not go to the ceremony, I will stand in the crowd. There I went. All the fraternities, student fraternities, all teachers, professors, were all collected there. And the new rector of the university made a terrible speech. And then, after the speech, under the song, old song, Freiheit, die ich meine, that means freedom as I mean it, they threw the books in the fire, students. I stood there quite overwhelmed about this and realized that my tears were running down. And then I knew, of course, that this was not a thing of 1 or 2 years. But I became quite determined to help persecuted people, and that I quit in my position, because in 1937 I became medical director of the whole hospital. And in my position I could help by taking people in, whether Christian or Jewish, it didn't matter, help them to disappear under the nose of the Gestapo to Czechoslovakia, which was still open. It was a rather hazardous business. It's a time when the word underground movement wasn't coined. I did it single-handed and developed a peculiar mentality of a soldier in a battle, knowing he will be shot, and yet going on. Exactly the same. Later, when I came to Oxford and people asked me to tell them, you see, there the after effect came. Got hot, sweating. See, I couldn't talk about this for about 6 months. That was the reaction afterwards. But in that time, I was a peculiar mental situation to help and to fight the people. I couldn't shoot them, of course. I knew if I would be caught, I wouldn't sit here today. And as you remember, in 1935, there came the racial laws, and afterwards, German Jews lost all their rights as citizens. They were destitute. Huh? Yet, we were allowed to go on in the Jewish hospital, but only for Jewish patients. The last patients, non-Jewish, was Dr. Urrutia, the ambassador of Guatemala at Franco, Spain. He had a spinal tumor and came, and I was very fortunate to take out the tumor. He was completely paralyzed and recovered completely. End of September, edict came that from 1st of October, all non-Aryan, Aryan patients must leave the hospital. And when I told him this, he said, I can't believe that. And I should get in touch immediately with the embassy here. It's very hot here, is it? Could you sit down? Now, the situation, of course, became worse, that Jews lost all their rights, although they were citizens, you know. They became destitute. And that ambassador rang up his colleague. And of course the Nazis immediately allowed him to stay on. That was his, immediately, you see, because with Guatemala they wanted to be very friendly. He became a very grateful man, and in fact, when the whole thing after the 10th of November 1938 became very serious, the pogroms and so on, thousands of people were taken to concentration camps, killed and so on. I was in Norway, but my wife got a letter from the embassy that visa for Guatemala are there for immigration. On the 9th of November, 1938, we knew after that German diplomat was shot, that the whole thing will be blow up, and it did. On the 9th of November, I gave the order to admit any male person without asking questions. And we had in that night 64 admissions, male admissions. See. And on the 10th of November, at 9 o'clock in the morning, I was rung up by the administrator in a terrible voice, said, "Will you please come over immediately? The gentlemen are here." There I got what is called fear of death, because I knew it was the end, my own end, because I was responsible. So I put my winter coat on and my winter overcoat and just looked at my children, they were still asleep, said goodbye to my wife and left, slowly. Still a terrible fear. But 50 yards in front of the hospital, I noticed I didn't have boots on, but summer shoes. So that thought, you can't go to the concentration camp in these shoes, made me absolute cold. I turned back, went home, and my wife was delighted. Of course, I said, no, I must only put my boots on. So I went to the hospital, to the administration, where all the consultants and medical assistants were all there, and they were in the anteroom where three SS officers sitting there with a revolver on the table, and a civilian who was the Gestapo man. I came in, said good morning. He turned around, shouted Heil Hitler, that you are the director of the hospital. Yes. You have given the order to admit anybody. 64 people have admitted. How can you explain this? Well, Commissar, that's very simple. Any illness can exaggerate by a strong emotion. As this has happened, I don't need to tell you. With a Berserk smile, he said, you will demonstrate every patient, every person you have admitted. And I can't. I must at least have the permission from you to discuss it with the admitting medical officer. Now that was granted. And for all our luck, the first person who was for him was a man with a stroke, was diagnosed immediately. I took his paralyzed arm up, he fell down. And that man, who was just behaved like a berserk, said, take him away, take him away, take him away. And from now on, I discussed every case as I would discuss in a medical meeting. Cold, factual, and of course invented all sorts of diagnoses, you see. Now, of these 64 people, I saved 60 on taking a concentration camp. Four, I'm afraid, I had to go. Then, of course, they took quite a number of most of the consultants and young doctors to concentration camp. And then I was told to just wait outside. And when I came back, he said, well, we have decided that for the time being you will stay on, but you have to come every day to me to report about admissions. He said that nothing wrong happens here. Verstehen Sie, Herr Doktor? Do you understand, Doctor? He said, I understand you very well, Herr Kommissar. Again, the same cold things. All that fear had gone. Then I had to go with him to the hospital. And when we came to the X-ray department, he opens the door of the dark room, who was standing there, the consultant of the ophthalmological department. What are you going to hear? That I'm waiting for X-ray. Waiting for X-ray here? You can wait in a cassette. Concentration camp. He was taken. So, after the people left, I said, I must go now and report the matter to the authorities. And the people wanted to really physically prevent me. But I just couldn't think of anything else. I went in my car to the leader. He was a brigadier in the Gestapo, a dermatologist in Breslau, and said, and at that time the hospital was already under the Nazi authorities, that I must report to you about this incident. And that man said, this is incredible. We haven't been informed. He said, well, what are we going to do? According to Hitler, the Jewish hospital have to be kept going. He said, yes, I know that. I'm going to ride to Berlin and come back in 4 days' time. I will let you know. He was quite amenable, you see. He was disturbed that they haven't been informed by the Gestapo. So I went back, and 4 days later I came to see him. He said, well, he showed me a letter signed by Himmler that the Judenbehandler, in that time Jewish doctors had their license withdrawn, but they were allowed to treat Jewish patients. The Judenbehandler who have been taken to Buchenwald should be discharged. Of course, I was delighted and immediately rang up the wives of the doctors. 1 week, nothing. 2nd week, nobody came. So I went again to that man. And he said, well, you have been in the army. No, I didn't have the pleasure. Otherwise, you would have known that if such a things is given in the usual channels, it takes some time. And there I lost my temper. Absolutely. I shouted at him. I said, you dare? If an edict against the Jews are given, within half an hour or 1 hour, they are carried out. He got the red in his face and shrugged his shoulders. Now, these are personal experience. On the 9th of November, coming back a bit, I was informed that our synagogue is burning. I said again, I can't believe that. I took my car and went to one of the side streets and went to the synagogue, a very modern synagogue, a very nice building. And there, the whole thing was surrounded by hundreds of people, synagogue burning, and SS men playing football with prayer books. And the newly appointed chief rabbi in his talar was standing there. I had to watch that. Now, again, a personal, what I have seen with my own eyes, what I see with my own eyes, I believe, can tell you. So
the next morning, why didn't the Gestapo take all 64 men?
Because
why did they bother to pay attention to you?
Yes. Well, that is a point which I never understood. See? I talked to them. They allowed them, he will stay in. Because I made quite clear points. In some cases, I said, well, look here, I don't know whether it was an epileptic fit or a heart attack. and we must investigate it. See. So, it was allowed. Only four people, amongst them two doctors, behaved so stupidly, you see, that I couldn't. Because he asked the people himself. That was that. But I was not allowed to leave Breslau. My passport was taken. But on the evening, I was called from Prague by a doctor friend. Oh, we have here a woman with a probably brain tumor, cerebellar tumor. Could you come over? He said, well, I must find out what the authorities, the moment I had a click. Could you ring me tomorrow night again? His name was Adler, Dr. Emil Adler. He later became the professor in charge of the physiotherapy department of Hadassah University. Anyway, I went to the Gestapo and reported about the admission and discharges. And I said to him, by the way, I was rung up last night to go to Prague for operation. I said, yes, I know. I said, I know you know, because I heard the click. I see. I know no fear anymore. It's gone. And what is your decision? I told you, until the 21st of November, you must not leave. No, 19th of November, you must not leave. Never give me a reason why. So, when he rang me up the in the evening, I said, I'm sorry, I only can come on the 22nd of, or the 20th of November. But in the meantime, you give her that and that. But if the condition deteriorates, then of course you must ask another neurosurgeon. But nothing happened. He reported me continuously, you see, and said, well, I think we can wait then. And on the 22nd, I got my passport back and flew to Prague. And it was not just an excuse that they want to save me, but it was my last operation on the continent. It was a cerebellar cyst of a woman of 59. She recovered and emigrated later with her son. That was this episode. But on the 20th or 19th of December, I was rung up by the administrator. I got a telegram from Portugal from my friend Almada Dias. Have got a paraplegia. Could you come, please? And on the next day, I was rung up by the administrator. Said, well, okay, the Foreign Office has rung up. Salazar has a friend and got in touch with Ribbentrop to ask whether you could come. And I said, we'll ring you. And sure enough, the leader of this department rang me. He said, oh, we are so glad that you are not in the concentration camp. That was the first question they asked. So he told me about this and said, yes, I would come immediately, but I haven't got my passport. He said, go please to the Gestapo, and you not only will get your passports, but you must also got a certificate that you are politically not safe for you. So I went to Gestapo, passport was there, and a certificate that politically, reliable, that was handed to me. I had to fly immediately with the next plane to Berlin, because on the next day, there was a Catholic holiday, and the embassy was closed. I had to get my things, my visa immediately. That was done. And then I went by train to Stuttgart to catch a plane to Salamanca. And the man in charge of the aerodrome, he said, "Yes, we have been informed about your mission. I must tell you that you are the only civilians in that plane. The others are officers who are going to Franco." It doesn't matter to me. So I went to the plane. The whole thing went up. About a half an hour, three quarters later, it was this very simple two-engine machines at the time of the Lufthansa. And suddenly, one of the machine gave out, and of course it came with a terrible shake. Most of the people fell out of the seats, but the pilot succeeded with one engine to make an emergency landing in Bern. And I was supposed to go to Portugal in one day. Inquired and said, "Well, I think we must have a new engine." I went to the telephone, rang up that man in Stuttgart, said, "We have heard about my mission, how important it is, that I do the operation immediately." And said, "Yes, it's terrible, doctor. What can we do?" I said, "Well, only two alternatives. Either you send another, it's a shorter Swiss plane, or it's much too expensive. Well, you must send another plane." And whether you believe it or not, within 1 hour, a plane came to take a Jew and the others, of course. But we couldn't get in one day, but we went to Marseille. And there we were told we cannot continue the flight in the night, otherwise we were shot down. But we left on next day, 7 o'clock in the morning. And we landed in Salamanca. All the officers say yes. The next morning we went, landed safely in Salamanca, and had to wait for a plane, Portugal. All officers left the plane, with the exception of one. He was a doctor, the Luftwaffe. And he told me he's going over to replace a colleague over Christmas, one of these so-called weather ships, or spy ships, of course. And he told me, you see, about his career, and he said, "Well, afterwards, I'm going to the colonial service." I said, we haven't got colonies, as far as I know." He said, "Oh, this time we will get them." And he told me that the whole administration was already prepared. Well, then I came to Lisbon, and quite a number of the medical faculty were there, including Professor Woolville. He was a former neuropathologist in Hamburg. I knew him. When I get out of the car, he said, "Thank God that we got you out of the concentration camp." I said, "No, can't you see? I'm unshaven." You see? Anyway, I examined the doctor and found that he has already improved. And against the view of some other doctors there, I did not operate. And I was very glad, because about 3 months later he died from another cause. It was a very malignant things, with metastasis in the brain and so on. Nothing to see on the X-ray. And he improved already, you see. He did all the examination and abstained from operation. But I stayed there, and again the people offered me a job But I said, I'm sorry, I'm still the director, so I must go back. But in that time, I was also already in negotiation with the British Society for the
Protection of Science and Learning.
Exactly, yes. I was offered a grant to Oxford. And I asked permission, and I got the permission to go to London for 2 days. That was on the 30th of December, 38. Came to the office to ask about our visa. Said, oh, there are visa in Berlin already. Thank you very much. Sent a telegram to my wife, start packing. And went the next day to Berlin, and she came to meet me in Berlin. And then we started the immigration with the permission of the board of the hospital. Quite a number of them were already on the way out themselves.
What was life like for your wife and your children at that time in Germany?
Well, we personally were not in any way insulted, you see. But of course, I don't need to tell you, the whole situation was terrible. The Jews had to have already the event, you know, with the yellow Star of David. In the passports, all Jewish passports, in the mail was a big red J, and you were not called doctor, but Krankenbehandler. And you had to add to your Christian name the name Isaac. And to the women, Sarah. Two names which were, of course, are well known in any other country. And that was, again, all these petty things to demoralize the Jews. But it has just the opposite, in fact, if everybody... I'll tell you, I don't know.